Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Yes, it is. It is the Grace Curley Show, and here we are, Tuesday, lot to get to. Before we go into COVID, because Dr. Fauci was very upset by all the football games over the weekend, you know, there's a lot of talk about what's going to bring us out of this, what's going to bring us into the new normal. You know, people have got to stand up. People got to go to, you know, run for your school board, run for your town committee. I'm telling you, the Neanderthal community is going to bring us back to normal. Seeing all of those boomer rubes out watching a little bit of football was a beautiful thing. And naturally, it really upset Dr. Fauci, who I don't think has gone to a restaurant in like 10 years. So seeing all those people, that really brought him back to like the Sturgis motorcycle rally and, you know, things like that, like Trump rallies and stuff. You know, he doesn't mind the Obama super spreaders, but those are sophisticated. It's follow the science. It's totally different. We will get into that, but I have to give an update. Speaking of the left's constant politicization of science and of this virus, we have to talk about the ivermectin update, the follow-up. I talked a lot about this yesterday. I was highly amused at this story because what happened was a doctor gave an interview to a local news station in Oklahoma. And what they decided to run with was not really the proper deduction from what he said, but they ran with this idea that because people were taking ivermectin, which is a parasitic anti-parasite drug that Joe Rogan also had said he had used, I think last week when he had COVID, people were taking that because they were listening to Joe Rogan because
Joe Rogan.
Yeah, because they hate Joe Rogan. You know, he's like the new Trump. He's a mixture of Trump and Ron DeSantis and Mountain Dew. They hate Joe Rogan. So people were taking this ivermectin, and the headlines they were running with, and the Rolling Stone ran with it because it doesn't take much. Just Google UVA rape hoax and you'll realize how much digging and how much cross-checking the Rolling Stone decides to do on their pieces. They ran with this idea that so many people were overdosing from ivermectin that people with gunshot wounds were filling up the emergency room hospital waiting rooms, and they couldn't get in, and they were, you know, it was a complete disaster. It was the perfect story. It's what Howie always says. Some stories are just too good to check out. And that's what it was. If the story, I think a really good way to think of it, if you're a reporter, because clearly they're BS detectors. I would say they're off, but clearly they are shut down. They are thrown away. They no longer have BS detectors because they are BS creators. So it's hard to detect yourself. But here's a tip. If any of these journalists want to get their BS detectors back, if you see a story and it seems like something that Jennifer Rubin might have written down in her diary. It seems like a pipe dream of Jennifer Rubin or Bill Kristol or Jim Acosta. Maybe you should give it 24 hours. You know, maybe you should not even give it 24 hours. Maybe you should call said hospital and inquire about it. I know it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to have to pick up the old iPhone and give that hospital a call that they would have greatly appreciated, because had they received that call, they wouldn't have had to put out a statement on their own denying this absurd story. But here's the update. We talked about all of this yesterday. I know what you're thinking. Grace, yeah, you told us all this. Well, Daniel Dale, fact checker extraordinaire at CNN. I often don't know who I love more. For pure content reasons. Glenn Kessler, who fact checks Tim Scott about his grandfather's days of picking cotton. He doesn't think that that's true because, or he, you know, the story's true, but it was on his own family's farm. So Glenn Kessler doesn't think that Tim Scott's ancestors suffered enough. So he puts that through a fact check. Glenn Kessler's, he's hard to beat. You know, he's a real fool's fool. But this Daniel Dale is giving him a run for his money. Watch out. You know, he's the younger generation of fact checkers. So Daniel Dale is reporting on this, and here's what a normal report would be. You would say, wow, we got this so incredibly wrong. Maybe we have to look inward. You know, this is the 5,000th story that we've done this with, that all of these mistakes, all of these corrections, all of these updates that should be labeled as retractions, they're all going in one direction. You notice that? They all make us look bad. They all fit the narrative that we're dumb, that we don't follow the science. We're stupid. That's the direction all of these go in. If you really look at them, they make conservatives look bad, or they demonize them. They make them look evil. They all end up being false. But the mainstream media is never going to do that. They're never going to self-reflect. Instead, they shift immediately to everyone's making fun of us. We are the victims. We are being wronged. We are being seized upon. I am being pounced on by all of these mean conservatives on Twitter. So Daniel Dale goes on with Breonna Keeler on the very low-rated CNN show. And he's talking about how the Oklahoma ivermectin story had a major flaw. Cut eight, please.
But Breonna, the story had a major flaw. Contrary to the strong suggestion of this story, there is no evidence that ivermectin was the key cause or even a primary cause of hospital backups in Oklahoma. And if you go through the doctor's quotes in the clips the local station released, there's no evidence even that the doctor claimed that himself. So far, all I can tell is that the doctor said ivermectin misuse was one of the reasons local hospitals are congested. So the local news story was flawed. Then as a result, the aggregated national stories were flawed and the tweets were flawed. So this is another cautionary media fail tale. One interview, one story shouldn't be sufficient to make dramatic claims like this. Media outlets need to do a lot more corroborating research.
Now, up to this point, I totally agree with Daniel Dale. You know, I'm thinking, maybe this kid's onto something. And then he has to, you know, circle the wagons here and make sure he protects all of his fellow journalists. He doesn't want to be too harsh on the fake news media. Cut nine.
But also, I need to add that some of the critics of the story also jumped to conclusions. After one of the hospital systems this doctor works with issued a statement saying they hadn't seen anyone come in with ivermectin complications, this statement was treated by some on the right as definitive proof that the whole story was completely made up, even that the doctor was a big liar. I saw some people started leaving him terrible online reviews. Again, though, it's really unclear the doctor said anything truly false. And secondly, these aggressive critics didn't pay any attention to the fact that the doctor is affiliated with more than one Oklahoma hospital. On Monday, a different hospital he works with said in a statement that they had seen a, quote, handful of patients with ivermectin complications. And they
a handful? Daniel, I don't need to explain to you why people were pouncing and seizing and weaponizing and hammering and salivating over this. I don't, but I will, because I'm just that generous. We were not told from the Rolling Stone and from Rachel Maddow and from The Hill and from Business Insider and from Vox or wherever the rest of them are. I might be wrong on Vox. I don't want to throw them under the bus. I'll double check that. We're all about accuracy here, unlike at CNN. We were told none of there was a handful. We were told that the ERs were so backed up that gunshot victims were having a hard time getting to facilities because of all of the people overdosing on ivermectin. That's the fact check. I know that, like Donald Trump, conservative media, right-wing radio nuts like myself, I know that we can almost do anything. You know, this is somehow our fault. It's our fault for enjoying the stupidity of the media when they show themselves so blatantly. But I can't take credit for this, Daniel. I can't. Damn, Daniel. I can't take credit for it. This is all you guys. You gotta own this.
And what's next? We're going to find out that there weren't even any gunshot victims that day or any of those days?
It's to take this story and say, well, technically there's been one or two cases, but that's not what the story was. That wasn't why people like Jason Johnson from MSNBC were accusing senators of having some sort of financial tie to ivermectin. It wasn't because of a handful of cases. It was because you guys made it seem like it was happening a lot. Backing up waiting rooms. The fact-checking industry, I need to get into this. It seems really fun. You can literally just make things up. And you just apologize, and everything is conservatives' faults. It's really amazing. When we get back, we'll play a little bit of this Joe Biden sound. They're into this new habit, you know. They don't want to send Joe Biden out. I'm guessing he didn't take any questions. Yeah, that's your answer right there. But they send him out for everything except to take questions on Afghanistan. And every time he finishes up one of these press conferences where he talks about Ida or he talks about the terrible jobs report, he always walks away, doesn't take any questions. And people say, Mr. President, what do you think about what's happening in Afghanistan? He doesn't take any of them. But this is their new technique, I guess, is bring him out for everything but answering questions. And they think, I guess, that's going to throw people off. I'm curious if it's working. 844-500-4242. I have to say that Caitlin Collins is reporting that President Biden is set to deliver what's being described as a pretty big COVID speech tomorrow, per multiple people. Officials are still finalizing the specifics, but expected to have several components on schools, private companies, and federal workers. The most they've done to date. Oh, boy.
Okay, so lockdowns. Got it.
I don't know. I don't know if they can do the lockdowns again. I say that, obviously, as someone who is praying that they don't. But I have a feeling this is going to be more mandates about the vaccine and things like that. I don't know. And Dr. Fauci is also weighing in, despite the fact that this Intercept article is really, really incriminating towards Dr. Fauci. Maybe I shouldn't say incriminating, but it definitely makes it seem like he knew more than he let on to Dr. Rand Paul. But even so, that doesn't stop him. He's still talking about masks and football games and dishing out his advice. So 844-500-4242. We're going to talk all about this on the other side. We're also going to talk about the return of schools, the return of the kids going back to school. I know I have a lot of parents who listen to this show, and I'm sure they'll want to weigh in. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
People are speculating on Twitter that Joe's big speech tomorrow might have something to do with shutdowns. I don't even know how that would work because he can't tell states what to do, really, in regards to this. He might give a suggestion, but after everything that happened in Afghanistan, I think it's safe to say people aren't really taking Joe's suggestions anymore. Mark Milley can take his suggestions, but I don't think I will.
I bet you a lot of it's going to involve sports stadiums being shut down after all those Joe Biden chants because he's that petty.
Yeah, that's true. He's got a thin skin and a glass jaw, which is quite a combo for someone who's obviously suffering from dementia and is ruining the country. Let's play a little bit of Joe Biden sound here. I think this is a good thing to play before we get into our next segment. Joe was talking about Hurricane Ida, and he did not take any questions. But even so, we don't need him to take questions for us to have some noteworthy sound. Let's start with cut one, please, Jared.
Thanking Senator Booker for all the work he's doing in the Senate trying to get this infrastructure and other the things we have to do to not just build back, but build back better than it was before.
Those sounds.
The hamster wheel in his head squeaking.
Yeah, you can actually hear him trying to think of things. It was a little bit Fauci-esque, dare I say. And let's also play cut four, please.
And we're now living in real time what the country's going to look like. And if we don't do something, we can't turn it back very much, but we can prevent it from getting worse.
Oh, is this the old climate change story? We're now living in real time. Yeah, we are. I think we got like 4 years left, according to AOC. What is it? 3, 4, 5? I don't know where we're at, but I'm happy we're now in real time. Because what does Howie always say about Joe Biden? He's stuck in time. Well, now we're in real time. So buckle up, everybody. Get ready. The party starts now. And of course, it would not be a natural disaster speech without the president trying to weave in climate change cut 6.
I think the country's finally acknowledged the fact that global warming is real and it's moving at an incredible pace. We've got to do something about it.
You know, I hate to sound like Joe Manchin here, but we got a lot on our plates right now. You know, specifically, there's Americans stuck in Afghanistan, inflation's going through the roof, a lot of kids are falling behind in school. And I just think that maybe for a little bit, we should bite off enough, but not too much that we can't chew.
And how dare you?
I know. But maybe, and hear me out here, maybe Joe handing out sandwiches to union workers on Labor Day is actually a good bar to hit. You know, that's something that's doable. You can hate on him if you want, but that was a task that he accomplished. He handed out the sandwiches. I'm sure they were decent sandwiches, and they probably got eaten. Changing the Earth's temperature might be outkicking our coverage a bit. You know, that might just be a bridge too far, an infrastructure bridge too far. That's just my take. Earlier, though, in the show, I had mentioned about COVID, how it really does seem like the Democrats overly politicized this virus in a way that is really damaging, and we're going to see the long-term effects of it. And this piece, it's an excellent, excellent piece. It's actually old. It's from September 2020. And even then, you could see the damage that these kids were going through, especially in the inner cities. The students left behind by remote learning. But one paragraph really stuck out to me. It was not hard to see how parents could have got the impression that children were at great risk. Towns and cities had closed playgrounds, wrapping police tape around them. People in heavily Democratic areas were wearing masks even on empty streets. There may have been an implicitly political dynamic at work. The greater the threat posed by COVID-19, the greater Trump's failure in not containing it. Joe Biden's campaign aired an ad in early September that read, "Are kids not safe in school?" Our kids not safe in school. In early July, Anthony Fauci, a trusted guide on coronavirus prevention, told the Washington Post that he still left his mail to sit for up to 2 days before opening it. Public health officials who had spent months scaring people into taking proper precautions were now struggling to unscare them enough to contemplate a return to school. And I guess my question for the audience, if we want to talk about this in the next segment, is how bad is this damage? Forget the critical race theory, forget the brainwashing. I'm talking about like basic math. Some of these kids don't know how to read. And they're not going to learn it via Zoom for the next year. 844-500-4242. We got a lot more to get to. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. We are talking a little bit today about how kids are returning to school in September. Some people are still doing the remote learning, but most kids, I think, are in person. They have the masks on, doing the zombie walks. And I was reading Bari Weiss's Substack today, and she posted this story from September of 2020, or she referenced it. And I looked it up, and it was really interesting because it told the story of a young kid in Baltimore who's really struggling with remote learning. And at one point, the person writing this actually was able to talk to Randy Weingarten. And it really did kind of open my eyes to how terrible she is. You know, and this is a very fair piece. I don't get the sense that this is some sort of like Trump crazy guy, but it's a very fair piece. But even so, you really do get a sense that This is not about the kids. This has never been about the kids. This is, you know, what Dr. Nan Hayworth always says. It's about power. And I'm going to read you a couple of quotes from that before we play a little bit of this Fauci sound, and we'll take your calls at 844-500-4242. But first, let's do the poll question, because Randy Weingarten is featured in it. Today's poll question is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. Call Steve today, 508-444-8003. That's 508-444-8003, or visit fairwayfinancial.net. Jared, what is the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Who's done the most long-term damage to the country? Joe Biden, Dr. Fauci, or Randy Weingarten?
I think Dr. Fauci has done a tremendous amount of damage. However, when I read the story about what happens when kids miss all of this academic schooling, and then on top of it, the socialization, you know, just learning how to make friends. I've said this story a couple times, but it stuck with me. I can't remember who exactly I was talking to, but it was someone who had a young daughter, and the daughter watched that show, Peppa the Pig. And I guess Peppa the Pig is a big thing with kids. Peppa the Pig actually has an album out that got a better rating than Kanye West's new album, Donda. And Peppa the Pig was trolling Kanye on Twitter. I don't agree with Peppa on that, because I thought Donda was fabulous, but that's neither here nor there. And this woman said to me that her daughter was watching Peppa the Pig, and she looked at the screen and she said, and she was probably 4 or 5, I think that's the usual demo for Peppa. And she said, Peppa the Pig has friends. I want to have friends. And the reason that blew me away was because, and maybe I'm wrong here, but when you're really little, you don't understand the concept of friends. You just have them. You just go to preschool or the kindergarten and you make them. There's not a process where you're thinking, as you get older and you go into certain settings, you think, oh, like you go to college, I hope I find a group, I hope I make friends. You become more aware of it as you get older. But at age 4 or 5, it's not really something you think about. You just have them. You know, your parents have friends and those people have kids and they become your friends. And, you know, that's why everyone has a friend from childhood they've had their whole lives. It's not something you recognize the process of. And I thought, how sad that these kids are living in such a weirdo time that the concept of making friends is like this far off mythical thing that they hope to be able to do one day, that they've only watched on television from a few fictional pigs hanging out together. I actually don't know. Maybe Peppa has friends that aren't pigs. Maybe she's friends with other farm animals. But it's a weird idea. And it shouldn't happen. And something that I've talked about before on Howie's show is that for us, yeah, it's been very damaging. People's businesses, and I'm not downplaying that, people have lost businesses. People have not been able to say goodbye to loved ones at the hospital. I have friends who weren't able to be there when people and their families died because they couldn't get in because of COVID. There's been a lot of things. But when you think about time-wise, and you have, let's say, a 5-year-old, we're going on now almost 2 years of that person's life that have been this weirdo COVID world. That's 2 out of 5 of their years. That's a huge chunk of their lives. When you're 5, 1 year is 1/5 of your life. So every year feels longer. And as you get older, the years go by faster. I know I'm kind of repeating what everybody knows here, but we don't even know the damage that this much strangeness throughout a huge chunk of these kids' lives is going to do. And in this piece, it talks about the importance of education. And I thought this was an interesting paragraph. And then I'm going to read you the Randy Weingarten part. And if any parents want to call in, feel free, 844-500-4242.
Most people believe Joe Biden has done the most long-term damage country.
Okay, great. It took decades more to realize truly universal education. Episodes in this country and elsewhere have shown the consequences of failing to provide that basic good. The destruction caused by the Second World War, for example, affected a generation of children. One researcher found that significant, long-lasting, detrimental effects on German children, with those in the most heavily bombed cities completing 1.2 years less of schooling and seeing their 1.2 years. That's basically where we're at right now. with how much you can say that they had remote learning, you know, for the last year and a half. But I think even a lot of teachers would admit that that's not the same thing. One researcher found significant long-lasting detrimental effects on German children, with those in the most heavily bombed cities completing 1.2 years less of school and seeing their future earnings decrease by an average of 6%. Other studies found similar effects among children who were evacuated from London. As the authors of one study put it, quote, "Participants describe a whole different life they believe they could have had if they had had the opportunities they feel they lost." Think about that sentence for kids right now. You don't think that in 10 years, kids who are in second grade right now are going to feel that way? When maybe their grades are struggling, or maybe they just completely lost interest in school. There's a quote in this same piece from a guy who says, "I'm scared we're never going to get some of these kids back." Especially when you get into these low-income communities. He doesn't know if they're ever going to join back into school. They might be completely lost through the cracks, lost in the system. Participants describe a whole different life they believe they could have had if they had had the opportunities they feel they lost. That is an incredibly poignant thing that everyone should be thinking of right now as we go into another year of this craziness. And there was a study that came out, and it was a South Korean study. And, you know, if this piece was written in September, it was probably a few months prior. It was, you know, when COVID had first started. And it really freaked people out because it talked about the transmissibility between kids. And the headline kind of took on a life of its own, even though it didn't necessarily add up. Like, once people started really looking into it. Here, let me give you a little bit of an idea. 4 days after the union sent their letters, the Times ran an article with an alarming headline: "Older children spread the coronavirus just as much as adults, large study finds." The subheading read, "The study of nearly 65,000 people in South Korea suggests that school reopenings will trigger more outbreaks." Now it goes on to say, a Harvard public health professor said, the study had flaws. Right from the start, that several of us pointed out, but the headline took off. "It was not hard to see how parents could have got the impression that children were at risk." I read that part earlier. Now, listen to when. So this person breaks down this whole thing, talks about this young man, Shamar. And he was a bright kid. You know, he was really good at math. And he starts basically just going on his computer. His mom had a drug problem. He starts living with his grandma. So it's going on the computer, the blinds are drawn every day, playing Minecraft, not really doing anything, not knowing how to work the Zoom thing, you know, not going, logging onto the classes. And at one point, the author of this, who was tutoring this kid, talks to Weingarten. And listen to this, okay, just to give you a sense of the woman who's in charge of the second biggest teachers union. "That afternoon, I talked with Weingarten of the American Federation of Teachers. She asked how the first day of school was going in Baltimore, and when I told her, she offered sympathy for Shamar's difficulties. 'There are no good choices right now,' she said." This was in September. She's still saying the same thing. "Yet many places had made a different choice," and this author goes on to explain places like Florida, places in Europe that did not do this to kids. "Many parents around the country were dubious about young kids sitting through hours of online instruction and were removing them from the public school system. In Los Angeles, kindergarten enrollment was down by 14%. In Chapel Hill, North Carolina, by 17%. John Hale, a professor of education at the University of Illinois, worried about the flight of middle and upper class students. Anytime they see the system as unstable and they pull out of it, it has a lasting effect. There has always been a gulf between public education and private, but the new disparity is stark. In many cities, children in private schools are going to school and children in public schools are not. All those fancy liberals in New York City that send their kids to these very woke, critical race pushing schools, their kids are all in school. And their kids never really took a break from it either. They maybe did the 2 weeks to slow the spread, but there wasn't a lot of time where they were sitting in at the kitchen counter on Zoom. Weingarten said this came down to trust. If parents and teachers aren't confident that the safety measures are in place, then you're not going to be able to stand it up in the middle of a pandemic, she said. contending that the virus was more harmful to kids than first realized, she cited the South Korean data. She was not aware of the revision, she said. And then another recent Times story on cases rising among kids, which had also been challenged for lacking context and scale. I noted the disagreements of her citations. She replied, in the absence of trusted information, people have fear right now. I asked if she worried that there might be a backlash against public education and teachers' unions if opening goes fairly well in private schools and public schools that have opened. I'm hoping not. And she said she did not put much stock in predictions that the closures would cause a sustained unraveling of public education. That was September 2020. I think it's pretty obvious what happened. It did exactly that. People are realizing now just how bad teachers' unions are, just how much power they have. And furthermore, parents were able to see what their kids were learning on these Zoom calls. And that was probably the scariest part of the whole damn thing. James, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, James.
Howdy, Grace. Hey, real quick, because you're on this topic. My daughter's a teacher, but also, you know, people keep mentioning, you know, Sweden's kind of followed. The world had a pandemic plan, and Sweden followed it. The rest of the world did not follow their pandemic plans when this happened. But Sweden has, their numbers are pretty much the same as everybody else's, even though they didn't do the lockdowns, they didn't kill their economy, and the kids are still in school, and they're not wearing masks. But really quickly, the real reason I called, it's a little, you were talking about it earlier, was I wonder if you can tell me, other than money, why is there such a concerted effort to block ivermectin, which is on the WHO's list of essential medicines? The two people that discovered it won a Nobel Prize for its discovery. It's been around for over 40 years and had almost 4 billion doses administered, yet they want everyone to take a new experimental vaccine, but not take this other drug. I just don't understand. What do you think?
I think, James, that deep down, you know the answer. You know, it's Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan had the Donald Trump effect on this. If a conservative does something, it automatically becomes bad. It's hydroxychloroquine all over again. And just to that point, James, in this exact article I'm reading from, it says on July 7th, President Donald Trump held a series at the White House with Betsy DeVos talking about the need to get schools open. And he was very strong about it. He said, open your schools in the fall. The effect of Trump's declaration was instantaneous. Teachers who had been responsive to the idea of returning to the classroom suddenly regarded the prospect much more warily. In other words, Trump wants to do it. It's got to be bad. Joe Rogan takes that. It's got to be bad. You know, and it's really unfortunate because politicizing medicine, the FDA's tweeting out, you know, don't take, you're not a cow. Don't take, I'm not saying it's good or not. I'm saying consult your doctor, you know, figure it out with your doctor. I'm not a doctor. But since when is the FDA sending out snarky tweets about anti-parasite drugs? It's also transparent, James, and you know it. I can tell by the way you phrase that you know exactly what it's all about. Guys, we'll be right back with more of your calls, 844-500-4242. As the longest-running magazine in the world, The Spectator believes that journalism must be witty and insightful, that ideas should be discussed without the constant threat of cancellation. The Spectator never confuses the serious with the dull, and it isn't right-wing or left-wing. It believes in challenging, informing, and entertaining readers. And I write for The Spectator. I actually have a piece up there right now about Bill de Blasio. It is not dull, I can assure you. I go into a little bit of Bill de Blasio's track record. And it's funny, when you Google him, he's got a lot of reasons people don't like him. But one that really stands out is his self-care habits, his gym habits. He travels 11 miles outside his mansion to go to the gym. You can check that out at Spectator World, but they have tons of great stuff. They talk about music, food, movies, politics, and it really is a good mix of conservatives, libertarians, liberals, anyone. You know, it's just really, it's entertaining stuff to read, and I think you guys would really like it. And right now, if you sign up today, you'll receive 3 free months of both the print and digital magazines, plus a free Spectator hat. Just use offer code GRACE at checkout to redeem the special offer just for listeners of this podcast. So just go to spectator.us/special offer and use offer code GRACE. I love The Spectator. I was reading it long before I started writing for them, and I was extremely honored to be asked to write for them because they have some of my favorite people on there. They have Stephen Miller, Carol Markowitz, Christopher Buckley, PJ O'Rourke, Toby Young, just a bunch of great people, and a lot of different opinions from the Biden administration to book reviews, from cancel culture to cuisine. The Spectator will entertain you from cover to cover. Sign up today to get 3 months of The Spectator for free, plus a free Spectator hat when you subscribe today at spectatorworld.com/special offer. Use offer code GRACE at checkout to redeem your offer. That's spectatorworld.com/special offer and offer code GRACE. We'll be back with more of your calls. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back.
Was I wearing a tiara when I came in here? Because if you happen upon it, will you have Lady Pennyface retrieve it and send it post-hence?
She's the epitome of class, style, and sophistication. She's Grace Curley.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. TJ, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, TJ.
Yeah, and I like to be referred to as a liberal revolution. You can find my Facebook page where we talk about real news. But I want to address, this is what you're harping on every time on the Howie Carr Show in your program, Miss. You're talking about the Taliban being some horrific effect on the population of Afghanistan, correct? That is what I've been hearing you talk about primarily.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
Well, no, I don't think it. Well, I think in some ways you might have points, but, you know, the things, it's biased. The problem is that this right-wing bias doesn't bring up positive effects that can also happen in other cultures, and it's aids to more bigotry and Islamophobia. I'm going to give you a perfect example. CO2 levels have been much lower prior to having how I refer to it, America KKK, push it.
Yeah, okay. You know, there's a lot of things that I think liberals can run with. You know, the fear-mongering, the climate change, the CO2 levels. I don't know if backing the Taliban and trying to convince me that the Taliban is, you know, doing a lot for the LGBTQ community is the road to go down. Maybe, but, you know, again, what do I know? There's another story here. Thanks for the call, though, TJ. There's another story here that Rutgers is barring unvaccinated student from attending virtual classes. This was on the New York Post today. Logan Haller, 22, told the NewJersey.com that he largely ignored the school's COVID mandate because all my classes were remote. And now he has been locked out of his email and related accounts, and he was told that he needed to be vaccinated, even though he has no plans to attend in person. Now, his stepfather, who's been vaccinated, told the outlet he is dumbfounded at Rutgers' stance. He said, "I believe in science. I believe in vaccines. But I am highly confident that COVID-19 and variants do not travel through computer monitors by taking online classes." Oh!
Yet.
Yeah, that's what you think. Wait until the IT guy, Dr. Anthony Fauci, comes and tells you about that computer monitor.
That's the PC variant coming.
Exactly. All right, guys, we'll be back with Toby Leary. Get on the line for all your gun questions.